And we're holding on Pezayin Amud Beis by the two dots, near the bottom, 11 lines from the bottom. We went to the Mishnah a couple of cases where a woman, when she wants to collect Huxuba, has to, or she wants to collect anything, where we're going to talk about in the Gemara, about whether we're talking about Huxuba or Mizonis. Primarily in the Mishnah, we're talking about Huxuba. So she wants to collect. There are certain cases where she's going to have to take a shvur, and one of them is if she said that she was paid part of it, that was pegemis ksubasa. We talked about that in the Gemara before. And another one is edech and meida shikrua, if one aid testifies that she's been paid. So the Gemara says, Sova, Rami Bacham Lamem, a Shvur Daraisa. Rami Bacham thought to say that this is a Shvur Daraisa. We had a similar thing in the first part of the Mishnah when it came to the one where Pegemas Ksubasa, where also we said he thought it was Daraisa, and Rava slugged him up. And here we're going to do the same thing. And of course you have the same question, what was Rami Bacham thinking? And the answer that the Ritva gives, that he didn't mean it was actually a Shvur Daraisa, he just meant that it's done similar to a Shvur Daraisa, and Rava is clarifying that in fact it's the Rabbanan. But anyway, so we start out that Savar Rami Bacham Lamem a Shvur Daraisa, he thought to say the Shvur over here is Daraisa. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, La Yakum Eid Echad Be'ish L'chol Avon L'chol Hatas, the pasuk says one aid is not allowed to stand up against a person as far as any avera or as far as any sin, meaning, in other words, to punish him or to require him to pay money or whatever. And we learn from that, from that pasuk we learn, since it says, that one aid is ineligible to testify that the guy should be chayiv misa or malkos or mammon or anything like that, but the implication is that he could stand up against the person, and the result is that that person will have to take a shavua, even if otherwise he would have been potter. The omamar, and we have another rule that we learn in a braisa, kol makam shashnayim mechayvin oisim mom, and echad mechayv shavua. Whatever case where two aidim would have been mechayv him to pay money, then one aid, if there's only one aid for the same thing, then instead he's going to have to take a shavua. So the same thing over here, if the husband had two aidim, that she had been paid the ksuva, then that's it. Then she wouldn't have any further claim. So therefore, one aid should have to make her swear. So Rami Rahama thought to say that we're talking here a shvur daraisa on that basis. Omar Rava shtei tshuvas v'davar, and Rava says, like what we had before in Rami Rahama's earlier statement at the top of the Amud, there are two refutations to that. Number one, every shvur in the Torah is only to swear and then not pay as a result of that. All the cases in the Torah, there are three of them, where a person takes a shvur is in order to be potter from paying. In the case of Eidechad over here, it means where Reuben is saying you owe me $100. Shimon is saying I don't. But there's one aid that says that he does owe it. Then if he takes that shvur, then he's potter. In this case, we're talking about her swearing in order to collect. That has to be a shvur d'rabbanan. Second of all, there's no shvur on a shibud that on a denial of a case that involves shibud of karka, which a ksuba has, a ksuba features a shvur on karka. So therefore, that's another reason it can't be a shvur daraisa. In fact, Tosfos gets into an interesting discussion over here of is it in fact the, about this whole matter of kfira, this whole matter of when a person denies a claim, that in some cases we make them swear and in some cases not, is there a complete equation between modu mitzas and eid echad? By modu mitzas, we learned in the Gemara yesterday that it wouldn't apply to karka. Is that in fact the case with eid echad? So Tosfos discusses that a little bit. The point is that Rava says, so you can't say that's Daraisa. Ella Omar Rava midrabanan. So Rava says, no, actually the shvur over here is only midrabanan. Kedela hofis daite shabal, just in order to make the husband feel better. He's claiming, after all, that he paid her. So the Chachamim are going to say, you know what, we say to the wife, you want to claim, you weren't paid yet, then go ahead and take a Shavua. Not because you'd be chayav to Daraisa. On a Daraisa level, we would have said that, you know what, you have a ksuba in your hands showing that you haven't been paid. Therefore, we have every reason to believe you. But still, the guy is claiming that he paid you, take a Shavua just to make him feel better. So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Papa, Ipikeahu. So Rav Papa says, if the husband is smart, Maisi lo de Shvur Daraisa, he would actually have a way of bringing her to have to swear a Shvur Daraisa. Now, what's the difference? How does he gain if he gets her to swear a Shvur Daraisa? So Rashi says that the difference is a Shvur Daraisa would involve an actual name of Hashem and holding a Sefer Torah. Whereas a Shavuot Rabbanon would just be, they would say, that Beis Din would say, if this claim is not true, then the person should be Orur, the person should be under a curse from Hashem or something like that. So the husband may want to make her swear a Shavuot Daraisa because that's much more serious and maybe that'll dissuade her from doing it in the first place. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, and so do many other Rishonim, and they say that there's no difference in that regard between a Shavuot Rabbanon and a Shavuot Daraisa. Both of them involve Hashem's name, and both of them involve holding a sefer Torah. In fact, Tosfos points out that Rashi himself, in a different Gemara in Gittin, also says the same thing as what Tosfos is saying over here, that it does involve, that a Shavuot Rabbanon does involve Mikivas Chepet, does involve holding a sefer Torah or whatever. So Tosfos gives other explanations what would be the husband's advantage of making her have to swear a Shavuot Daraisa. One of them is Tosfos describes. We talked about yesterday the concept of hipuch shavua, the concept that sometimes the shavua can be flipped around. Instead of Reuven swearing and being potter, for example, Shimon can instead swear and collect on the basis of that shavua. So now suppose that you can't be mahapich the shvua because suppose that you can't flip around the shvua, say because, for example, the one that you would be flipping it to is himself choshed al shvua, he's suspect of swearing falsely, and therefore you can't make the person take a shvua. Then we'd say chosra shvua the mechuyav la. Then the shvua goes back to the one who's chayav, and if they can't swear, then they're going to have to pay, as the case may be. So now the husband would have a certain advantage in making his wife swear a Shavua D'Rabbanan, in that if there is that situation, he may end up being able to get out of paying her if it's a Shavua D'Raisa and we're not able to flip it around, we're not able to say, let's say, that he himself should swear and be potter because he's Choshed al Shavua. Then Tosfos discusses another point, that Bechlau, can you even do Hipuch Shavua with a Shavua D'Raisa? So we talked about that yesterday. In fact, there is a Machloikas in the Gemara about that in Shavua, whether with a Shavua D'Raisa you can even do Hipuch at all. Different Achronim talk about, so then why is Rashi explaining over here that a Shavua D'Raisa does not, that a Shavua D'Raisa involves holding a Sefer Torah and a Shavua D'Rabbanan does not. So there's different Achronim, I mean, talk about different possible angles on it. One, now Rashi himself, earlier in the Sugya, at the beginning of the Gemara, in fact, explained that the difference between a Shavua D'Raisa and D'Rabbanan is, as far as Hipuch, is that a Shavua D'Raisa, you can't flip from one person to the other, but a Shavua D'Rabbanan you could. So why all of a sudden is Rashi over here using a different explanation? So Marsha points out that a practical reason could be, since over here the Gemara is saying, if he's smart, then he's going to want to do this. Well, if it's a matter of just that he could or can't do Hipuch Shavua, sometimes that can work to his advantage. Let's say he might be better off with her doing a Shavua D'Rabbanan and then being able to be Mahapas. He might actually be in a situation then when he can swear and be potter. So therefore, for that reason, Rashi had to find a different explanation. And the Pnei Yeshua talks about also, the point is that this whole matter of whether you can be Mahapach Shavua D'Raisa versus D'Rabbanan is not agreed to by everybody. As we said, there's a Machlokas in the Gemara in Shavuos about that. There is an opinion over there. Ma'abar Avashi says you could even be Mahapach Shavua D'Raisa. There were even Rishonim who learned that the Halacha is like him. So therefore, Rashi preferred to give an explanation over here that works according to everybody.
Let's hold back and forth. She has a star in her hand, which is Yeshua.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't she have, I know I'm much like a very violent, but she has a ksuba and a half. If you went ahead and paid her, why didn't you get a avis or have a receipt that you paid her something?
So it's a good point. It's a good point. But nevertheless, though, so now we just said that the shavua is going to be the hofis daita shavala baitim. It's true. We said in principle she shouldn't have to swear, especially because she does have a ksuba. But we said midrabanan though, to make her husband feel better. Listen, you know, he has reason to believe that he paid off the ksuba. I mean, we're not assuming that the guy's just blatantly lying and basting to get out of his responsibility. So therefore, so we tell her, you know what, take a shavua. It won't. If you really didn't receive your ksuba, it won't hurt you. So now that was a shvur de rabbanon, but now the chofa is going to say that he has a way, if he's smart, to actually bring her to swearing a shvur de araisa. So that's what we were just discussing. What's the advantage of a shvur de araisa over a shvur de rabbanon?
Yeah.
Anyway, so what would he do? Yoiv lo ksubasa ba'apechad sada. Let him pay her off her ksuba in the presence of one witness. Eches man alaf ta. So he's claiming he already paid her ksuba. Fine. He only has, in this case, we're talking about he has one aid for it. This is the scenario we're talking about. He had one aid. Before we were talking about he had no aid in at all, but she was merged with Mitzvah, where she said that she had received part of it. Here we're talking about he has one aid. So what he does is, so her papa says, let him pay her ksuba again in the presence of one aid, a different aid. The samich sada kama sada basra. Then what he does is he joins together the first aid and the second aid. He brings them both to Beis Din. So what happened? He brings with him, the first time he brings with him the aid, Reuven, who says that he paid off the ksuba. She denies it and says, I didn't receive it. So we're saying that she would have to take a shavur de rabbanan. Now what does he do? He finds Shimon, pays her off the ksuba in the presence of Shimon.
Yeah.
Again. So wait, in other words, we're saying, let's say, for example, that she didn't, so fine, she swears that she didn't receive it, so now he's on the hook to pay her. So now what he does is wait, so he pays her again, then what he does is he brings these two adim together to Beis Din, so now if she denies that she received the payment, then both, So now both of them are able to be giving eidos that she received her ksuba and umuki lahanach kamoi b'halva and umoikim lahu lahanach kamoi b'milva, and then the husband will now sue her for the first payment, and he's going to say, after all, it must be that I lent you money, that you borrowed money from me. After all, we see now I paid you your ksuba. So if you're claiming, so now, the money that I gave you before in the presence of one aid was a milva. So now if she says I only received this time, so now you have the one aid testifying that she received the previous time as well. That's already a milva. There's no shibud kalkois on it because it was a milva alper. And there's one aid against her. So therefore, now you're going to have a shibud daraisa. So now if, yeah.
I lost.
Okay, so he had one aid
the first time.
He had one aid for the first time. One aid, she's denied. So now we're saying that she would swear a shvur de rabbanon, and once she's sworn that shvur de rabbanon, then she has the ability to collect.
Right.
Now, what does the husband do? He wants to get her to swear a shvur de araisa, either because, as Rashi said, a shvur de araisa is more serious because it involves holding a sefer Torah and using Hashem's name, or because, as Tosfos said, a couple of possibilities involving hipok shvur, that this way she can't say, you know what, instead of me swearing and collecting, if you really think you paid me, then you swear and be potter. Anyway, whatever the case. So now what he does is, he brings another aid and pays her in the presence of that one aid. If she claims she didn't receive the second payment, nothing doing, because both Adam are saying that she received a payment. It's not the same payment, but we're going to talk about that point in a minute. But they're both testifying that she received the payment of 1,000 zuz. Now what happens is, now he sues her for the original amount that he says that I paid you, and you're claiming that you didn't. Well, he's saying that's not a payment. That original one was milva. After all, the ksuba, you've definitely received. We have two aidim backing me up that you received. We have Reuven and Shimon together saying that you received your ksuba as a payment of a ksuba. So therefore, necessarily, the other payment that I'm claiming you must have received must have been a milva. Well, it's a milva alped. There's no shtar, fine. But I have one aid that you received that milva. Therefore, pay up. Therefore, take a shavur daraisa or peya.
What happens if you have to have two eights to get the term?
Ah, well, that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Maski for Rav Shisha braided of Idi. So Rav Shisha braided of Idi asks on that. Heach somech sada kama sada basra. How can you have that? How can the one aid and the second aid, how can they be joined together? They each saw a different payment.
Different.
So if she denies both of them, then you still, in effect, only have one aid. So therefore, what's going to happen? She could even swear, and then she's going to collect a third time. That's not going to do the husband any good.
Now, if she swears,
then she can collect. Yeah. Now, Tosfos points out that, so what? Why is the Gemara even bothered by that? The fact is, the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses that maybe you don't need it. Maybe, as the Gemara is saying over here, you don't, in fact, need the two Edim to have seen the same transaction. As long as each of them saw a transaction of 1,000 zuz between them, there is an opinion in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that they can join together. So maybe our Gemara is following that opinion.
So Tosfos
leaves the question open. A couple of the Mephoshim deal with the answers to that. One of them being the Pnei Yeshua talks about that. In fact, we learned the other day about the concept of sitroi, that when a person is paid off a debt, he has the right to claim that this was actually in payment of a previous debt for which you don't have a shtar, and therefore you still have this amount outstanding. So Rashi may be learning like that. The Gemara, the Tosfos was asking really not so much on Rashi's explanation, but on the Gemara itself. The Gemara may be taking the view over here that if we do that, if we have the two individual edim, then in both see the same transaction, she can always claim sitroi. She can always claim it was a different debt. So how is this going to work? Says Rav Shisha Brei D'Ravidi. El Amr Rav Shisha Brei D'Ravidi. So rather, Rav Shisha Brei D'Ravidi says, We're still continuing with what Rapapa says. Let's say that the husband has a reason that the husband wants to get her to swear a shvur daraisa. Either again on the theory that a shvur daraisa being more stringent, she's more likely to say never mind. Or as Tosfos is saying, because there can be cases involving hipuch shvur, involving where he can leverage hipuch shvua, or the lack of it in the case of a shvua daraisa, to his advantage. So Rav Shisha Brei D'Ravidi says, here's what you do. Yoid lok subasa ba'apis sada kama zis sada basra. What you do is, let him bring the first aid as well as the second aid, pay her ksuba in the case, in the presence of both of them, umukim olahana kamoi bahalba. And then say, in Basin, that the original amount he gave her was actually a loan, which is still outstanding. Now, only the first aid saw the first payment. Both of them saw the second payment. So now she can't claim that she didn't receive her ksuba, because the two aid him against her. The fact you're saying she has a document with her, that doesn't, first of all, not always is the ksuba a written document. We're going to talk about that later in the Masechta. Sometimes they just relied on Tanai Basin. But even if she has a written document, the written document is not contradicted by the fact that there were two aid him saying that she was paid up. Okay, so why do you still have the document? Okay, I forgot to pick it up. Or, okay, you know, who...
He forgot.
That's what I'm saying. He can say, for example, yeah. Anyway, I don't know, you know, it's a ksuba. You know, these things, you know, you have these old ksubas that you find in Jewish museums or whatever that are beautifully illustrated or whatever. I didn't want to take it away from you. It's a nice thing, you know, I didn't want to take it and rip up such a beautiful thing. Anyway, whatever. So the point is now, meanwhile, the first payment was seen only by one aid. Okay, but the first payment, he's saying, wasn't the payment of the ksuba, it was a loan. You have one aid. One aid by a loan, you have to swear. So therefore, that's a shvur daraisa. That's the point. That's, we're trying to establish how he can make her swear a shvur daraisa. Now, the result is, in other words, she might say, when he's bringing her to Beis Din again, you know what, I don't want to swear a shvur daraisa. So therefore, then she'll admit, you know what, I was paid, and then he's scot-free. That's the point.
It wouldn't be, I thought that's what it would be if she's a mother mixes.
No. Right. There's three ways of shvur daraisa. Two of them are relevant for our sugya. One of them is mode of mixas. The other one is where there's eid echad. The other one is
eid. That's shvur, but I didn't know it's
so that's the thing. So that's, we just said before, we learned from the pasuk la yokum eid echad be'ish earlier at the bottom of pezayinum abez. We learned from that pasuk, from the implication of that pasuk, that any time when two eidim would have made a person chayav to pay, then if there's only one aid for that same claim, then he has to take a shavua. So, and that doesn't even need modu mixas, even kofa hakel. Kofa Hakel, Midaraisa, wouldn't have to take a Shavua at all, only with the Rabbanon, if there was Shavua's Hesed, but if there's one A, then he's Kofa Hakel, he still has to swear because of that one A.
Midaraisa.
That's what we're saying, yeah. Maski for Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi asks on that, Akati Yeholo Mema Bez Ksuba Savoy, still, wouldn't she be able to get away with it? She could claim that there were two different, Ksubas. Now, why would there be two different Ksubas? So one possibility would be, it was a large amount, and so she says, Rashi that we have in front of us over here, just says that, there were two Ksubas, and fine, I gave you back the Ksuba for the one, but I still have the other one. Now Rashi doesn't explain over here why there would be two Ksubas in the first place. Rashi Madura Kama, that's brought in Shittim Kubetis, brings a couple of reasons. First of all, it might be, she says, it was a very large Ksuba, so I had Rachmanos on you. Instead of having one big amount, where then you're going to have to pay one lump sum at a time, I had Rachmanos on you, and I wrote it as two, I was willing to write it as two different stories so that you can pay it out piecemeal. The other possibility is she could be saying, the other possibility would be, we're going to talk about in the next paragraph, when a woman is divorced and then her husband remarries her, then usually the expectation is that they keep the same ksuba as before. But you can have a case, where she says, I'm only going to marry you only if you write me out a new ksuba. Meanwhile, the original ksuba has not been paid off yet. So therefore, so she may well have two valid ksubas, one from her first marriage to him and one from her second. So Rav Ashi says, can't she claim that over here then? And then again, he's out more money. Elo, Amar Rav Ashi, who de moide lehu? So rather, Rav Ashi says, we can use Rav Shisha Breder of Edi's answer, but it has to be that before he does that, he informs the Edim, before he pays them, you should know, I already paid her in front of one of you, she's denying it, now I want to do this whole thing in order to manipulate her into a Shavua D'Oraisa. So now, once they heard him say that, So now, the Rav Ashi's question was that the one aid would back her up, that he saw that both payments were given to her as a ksuba rather than as a milva. So therefore, she could claim that you paid me off in front of the one aid, the first ksuba, and now, thank you, you've just paid me off the second ksuba. But now, it informs the aidim in advance that the first payment was not, after all, l'shem ksuba, but rather l'shem milva. Now, the aid's going to know that. He's not going to back her up anymore. When she says, yeah, but what you paid me in front of the first aid was l'shem ksuba, that aid will say, no, you don't know. In fact, it was l'shem milva. So therefore, she won't be able to get away with saying there were two ksubas, especially Rashi points out that anyway, two ksubas is a very rare situation. Milsav lo shticha, so therefore she won't be able to get away with it.
We have to ask the Eidech, what was it? How many get when you got paid?
So that's the thing. So now he'll say, the husband informed me that that payment that he said that he gave at the time was a milva rather than a ksuba. So now, it's not really changing because the point is, he hasn't yet given the address, or he did give the address. He gave the address that she had been paid. But at the time, he didn't know what it was. Now he's saying, now I found out that it was actually not a ksuba, but rather a milk.
Usually the aides is watching, he knows what's going on.
Yeah, but in this case, you can say, I found out that's not necessarily kimchi yagid shuvan chozer magid. He's not contradicting what he did before. He agrees that she received money. He's just saying she received it as a milva rather than a ksuba. There is, in fact, a point that some of the mafoshim bring up over here that maybe, earlier in the discussion over here, when we said, with Shisha Breder of Edi's question, Heyach Samech Sada Kama Sada Basra, there are Mephoshim who learn the question is not, like we said, how can you combine these two Edim where they saw two different transactions, but rather essentially, how can you use the one aid for two different purposes? We're using him to make her pay, as well as we're making her, we're using him to say that she received, right, that she received the payment, as well as to make her swear because of Eid Echad. How can you reuse him for two different purposes? But anyway, so the answer is, in the end, we're saying that he's using him as part of two different aids. In Rav Papa's original suggestion, we used the first aid. We didn't bring him together. We brought him all together with the second aid to Basin, but we didn't both have them see the same thing. Now, in the end, we're saying we have them see the same thing and then work from there.
And also, nothing wrong with having one aid is, see one transaction 1 year and 3 years later.
That's what Tosfos is saying. There's an opinion in Masechta Sanhedrin that works, right? Okay. We said in the Mishnah, in the Chosim Meshabadim, we said another case where the woman has to take a Shavua when she's going to collect is if she's collecting from the Chosim Meshabadim, from property that the husband had previously sold. So now the Gemara says, like, and also we said, in the Mishnah also, if she's collecting from the Chosim of Yisoyimim. So we're going to focus on that one. We're going to focus on the Nechosim of the Yisoyimim. Now we learn in a Mishnah in Shavuos, v'chein ha-yisoymim lo yiporu ela b'shavua. The Mishnah says they are yisoymim when they're collecting a debt. They can collect only with a Shavua. So the question is mimah. So the question is who are we talking about that the yisoymim are trying to collect from that they should have to take a Shavua? Ilema miloyve. Are we talking about the malva died? His yisoymim have now inherited the debt. And they want to collect the debt from the loiva, and we're saying they have to swear. Why? What's the logic? Their father would have been able to collect without a shvua, and they, the yisoyim, should have to take a shvua before they can collect. What's the logic?
They got paid.
There is such a thing as shvuas yisoyim where they have to swear that, for example, our father didn't inform us before he died that the loan was paid. We didn't find among his papers any receipt for the loan, etc. But still, why should we be more machmer on them if he's collecting from the loiva himself that they should have to take a shvuah? So rather, we have to understand that Mishnah to mean v'chein ha-yisoymim min ha-yisoymim lo yiporu ala b'shvua. It means if the one set of yisoymim of the malva are collecting from the yisoymim of the loiva, so both the malva and loiva had died, and the debt is still outstanding, so it's one set of yisoymim collecting from the other, then lo yiporu ala b'shvua. Then, since they're collecting from yisoymim, then therefore they would have to take the shvua of that our father didn't give us instructions and so forth.
There's too many spaces.
We're talking all golem, yeah, because in general, basin doesn't deal. In general, basin is not going to accept a case against Tam. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar of Zrika, Amar of Yehuda, lo shonu el sha'amar yisoymim, that would apply only if the yisoymim say, Amar lanu abba lavisi o parait. Only if the yisoymim of the loiva say, our father told us before he died, I did borrow this money and I paid it back. And meanwhile, the malvas, Yoshim, are saying, we have no evidence of it. So then we make them take a shavua that in fact their father didn't tell them and they didn't find any such evidence and so forth. Abel omri, but Rav Zirika says, if the heirs of the loiva say, omolano abba loy lavisi, that our father told us he never borrowed this money, then after Shavua lo yiparu, then we would say the Malva's heirs can't collect even with a Shavua. We would assume that there's a concept in and of Meshat the Meshasmi, so a person is not going to lie right before he dies, he knows he's going to the Olam Emes, he's not going to play games at a time like that. So therefore, we should assume that he's, what he's saying is correct.
Lo yadvarim olam.
What?
Lo yadvarim olam. Ladam. Lo yadvarim olam.
Lo yadvarim olam. Right. But maskif lo rava, but rava asks on that. On the contrary, adrava, kola omele lovisi, ka omele paraiti dami. On the contrary, we have a rule in halacha that says that if a person says I didn't borrow, then it's the equivalent of saying I didn't pay. Because what happens if he's saying I didn't borrow? Necessarily, it means I didn't pay. Well, they're saying you did borrow, and they're saying you did borrow, and have shtar or whatever it is to back them up. So therefore, on the contrary, if a person says loy lavisi, he's worse off. So how can we say just because their father said I didn't borrow means that therefore now they should be now they can't now even if the now even if the yoshim take a shavua that they shouldn't be able to be paid? Why not?
That's a statement.
Yeah.
If a person says
loy lavisi, it's the equivalent of saying loy parnait. Yeah. So the Gemara says. So the Gemara discusses it in particular extensively in Masechta in Masechta Shavuos and the last parakim over there, which are all about these dinim of Shavuos, so of Shavuos the Eidos and Shavuos HaPikadon and whatever it talks about that a lot. Ela iitma hochi itma. So no, you have to say if this was said, then it was said as follows. In other words, let's correct the statement of Rav Zirika. Amar Rav Zirika, Amar Rav Yehuda, loy shanu ela sha'amri yisaimim onulanu abba lavisi oparait. This that we're talking about, that they can take a shavua and then they can collect, is only if the yisoymim of the loiva say that our father told us before he died, I did borrow the money and then I paid it back. But if they say our father told us I never borrowed this money, then nifroyin shaloy b'shavua. On the contrary, the original version of Rav Zirika's statement was they can't even collect the debt even with a shavua. even if they swear that our father didn't tell us anything. The Malvas Yoshin, that is. Now we're saying on the contrary, they don't even need a shvur. Because when their father says loy labisi, it's the equivalent of saying loy paraiti, and therefore, in other words, so their father, in other words, is in effect admitting that he never paid the debt. Well, in that case, then they don't need a then the Yoshim or the Malva don't need a shvur in order to collect, even though they're collecting from Nichsi Yisaimim. But in this case, there's a good clear reason to say that they didn't receive the payment, because we have the Hadas Baldin, Kamei Edim Dami, and his saying, I didn't pay, his saying, I didn't borrow, is the equivalent of saying, I didn't pay. Okay.
That's really dependent what the father tells them, you know, I don't owe anyone money, or...
So that's the thing, we're saying, even if the father says I didn't borrow money, we're saying the fact is, with that, he's implicitly admitting that he didn't pay, because he can't pay what he didn't borrow. He's saying I didn't borrow, and you're saying before Misa, a person's not going to lie. Fine, he may have forgotten, he may have thought, he may be confused, whatever. But the fact is, we have a Hadas Baldin from him that he didn't pay. And therefore, that's reason enough that the Yisomim of the Malva can now collect from them without a
shul. Where's Das May coming from?
Where's the word coming from?
Hadas
Baldin. The Baal Din himself, the lawyer, is admitting right before he died that he didn't pay off this debt implicitly by saying that I didn't borrow. It amounts to saying I didn't pay.
But well, most people throughout the lifetime borrow and pay back.
Okay, but
so when he forgot
that he borrowed, but say whatever it is, doesn't matter. The point is we have an admission from him saying that he didn't pay. Meanwhile, the Malva's heirs are saying he did borrow from us and he didn't pay back. So therefore, that's reason enough for them to be able to collect it. Okay. The Mishnah continued, Binifras Shaloi Bifon of Leitikora Ela B'Shvur. Another case is where she's collecting, another case where she has to take a Shvur if she's collecting the Ksuva not in her husband's presence. And so for example, we said in the Mishnah, the husband is away in the Medina Sayyam, is away in a faraway city.
That's when Bezin kicks in.
If she wants to collect the Ksuva. What? It has to be after the divorce, obviously.
So she was Makabal.
So she received her gift, but she hasn't yet. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Omer of Achas Sar Habira. Rav Achas Sar Habira says, now Rashi just says on the word Sar Habira, Kach Kinuyoi. That's his nickname. Rashi doesn't explain what that means. And I've said different people have different possibilities. Basically, I mean, Sar means the ruler or the prince or something, and Bira usually means some kind of fortress. We find in some places in the Gemara where it actually is a nickname for the Bais Mikdash or part of it. Why he was called that, we have no idea. See, from this Gemara over here, based on the name of the Amora that we mentioned over here, of Yitzchak, who's actually Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha, then it comes out he was one of the Amoroyim, he's long after the Churban, so he can't be Sar Habira because he has anything particular to do with the area of the Bais Mikdash. So it may have been a hereditary title that his ancestors had that position. We actually find in a different place, earlier in our Masechta, we also have Rav Acha Sar Habira, but there, the way the Gemara phrases it makes it sound as though he was a Tana. So it could even be some historians think maybe there were two Rav Acha Sar Habiras. So in that case, maybe the second one is a descendant of the first one and he inherited the title, or maybe they just gave him the title just as a title of respect or something. There's a pasuk in Nehemiah where he just he's mentioned a few times in Shas, yeah. But I was going to say that there's a pasuk in Nehemiah, they bring in this connection, a pasuk in Nehemiah where he says that I appointed someone named Hanoni as the Sar Habira. Where this is talking about when they were rebuilding the walls of Yerushalayim, because the pasuk says he was an emistic person, the Yoreh of the Kinei Rabim, and he had been a Yoreh Shemayim for a long time. So maybe in the same sense, maybe they use Sar Habira as a title of respect for an exceptional person like that who's also an Ish Emes and Yoreh Shemayim.
So in the Tanakh,
he has an actual position, right? And that Nehemiah appointed him.
Right.
Anyway.
So maybe he was in charge of building a big.
So maybe it could be. Yeah. Anyway, whatever the case. So he says, Maisa Balafne Rav Yitzchak Ba'Antiochia, a case about this, about a woman wanting to collect her ksuba when her husband was around, in Antiochia. It goes about as it wasn't just Rav Yitzchak, it was Rav Yitzchak Napa, the Amora. Anyway, of Omar and Rav Yitzchak said, Loishonu Elo Ksubas Isha, this that we're saying that she can even collect, and that means that Beis Din is going to go take away his nechosim to pay for this, applies only when we're talking about paying a woman's ksuba. Mishum Chinah. And the reason is, as we've discussed earlier in the Perek, because of the matter of Chinah, we want to make it, according to, we said over there, Rashi explained that chino means we want women to have a mental guarantee that they're going to be able to collect their ksuba, otherwise they're less likely to want to get married. Tosfos explained over there, brought from Rabbeinu Hananel the other way around, that it means we want women to have a certain amount of assets so they'll be more attractive as potential shidduchim. And we said the Aruch says that what it means is knowing that a sort of a hybrid between them, knowing that she'll be able to collect her ksuba, she'll serve her husband and do housework much more faithfully. Anyway, the point is, so only by ksuvas isha mishum chinah are we going to have this concept that you can collect when the guy who owes the money is not around. But if it's a Baal Choyv, then no, then you say, based, and we'll tell him, wait till the guy comes back from overseas, and then you can deal with collecting it. We're not going to go take away Nechosim from him without him being there. After all, maybe he has,
put away
among his files, no, maybe he has among his files a Shoiva, a receipt, showing that he paid it off already, or something else, or whatever, yeah. Or maybe he'll bring proof that your shtar is forged, or whatever. So wait till he shows up. But the Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, after the Baal Choyv, Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman, no, even a Baal Choyv, we still apply the same rule. Shalom Yehekel Echabecha, Noto Ma'osef Shachaberei, you don't want that any person is going to take somebody else's money in a loan, and then he's going to go live overseas, where the guy, and we're going to have to tell him, you have to wait till the guy comes back, about the Noel Delos Mifnei Loven, you're going to end up, people are going to lock their doors when people come to borrow money, because they're going to say, I don't want you to do that. So therefore, even in the case of a Loiva and Malva, you would do that. Tosfos actually brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that the halacha is not like Rava Amar Rav Nachman, but rather the halacha is like Rabbi Yitzchok Napa. However, most of the Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, the halacha is like Rava Amar Rav Nachman, and therefore that yes, you can collect for a Baal Choyv even when he's not in town. And Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions. It brings the first opinion as the primary one, and it brings the second one. It brings Rabbeinu Hananel's opinion as a yesher.
Do they make him swear that?
So they might still make him swear, but still, the point is he has recourse in Beis Din, yeah.
Oh, he's not going to Beis Din, but Beis Din can make him
then
swear.
Then Beis Din can, right. Beis Din might be able to make him swear, fine, but nevertheless, he still has the ability to, rather than Beis Din telling him, wait till the guy shows up. There are rules in it. He has to have the shtar, and it has to be Mekuyam. Beis Din has to be able to certify, as we learned earlier in Masechta, about the whole matter of Kiyum Shtaris. They have to be able to certify that the signatures on it are genuine. And you have a number of other, he has to bring, if he wants to take certain Nechosim, he has to bring solid proof to Beis Din that these Nechosim actually belong to the Loiva, or used to belong to the Loiva, whatever. There's a number of details that you have in order for him to do that. But once those details are satisfied, then, okay. The Mishnah had said now, Rav Shimon Omer calls man shetevas to basal chola. Rav Shimon had said in the last part of our Mishnah, any time that she's collecting her ksuba, then the Yoshim can make her swear. We're talking about after the husband died and his Yoshim, Yoshim the property. So if she's collecting her ksuba, then they can make her swear. But if she's not collecting, if she's not demanding her ksuba, then they can't make her swear. So the question is Rav Shimon Aheya. Which part of the Mishnah is Rav Shimon referring to with this din? Amar Rav Yom Ya'ahol. So Rabbi Yemi says he's referring to the last part that we said before that of the Mishnah, Benifras Shalai Befanav, like Tipora El B'Shvua, when we said that if she's collecting when the husband's not around, she can do that only with a Shvua. So Rabbi Shimon comes to, so the Tanakhama is saying, Loishnalim is Zoni, Veloishnalim Ksuba. Doesn't matter whether she's demanding in based in Mizonis, as an Almona is entitled to, or whether she's demanding Ksuba. Either way, the Tanakhama would say she's collecting from the Yisoyim, so she needs to swear first. In the case of Mizonis, in the case of Mizonis, that she hasn't previously taken any of the husband's assets for herself for this, and in the case of the Ksuba, also that, and also that she hasn't been paid off part of the Ksuba already.
But if he has paid off, or she did receive money, then why she had the Ksuba for it?
Again, if she received the whole money, you could say the husband didn't have a chance to pick up the Ksuba from her, same as we said before, yeah. So the author of Shimon Lameimer calls man shetevas Ksuba. So now the Shimon would be coming and saying that as only when she's collecting her Ksuba, Yosher Mashvianosa, only then can the Yoshin demand from her Shvua that she didn't keep anything after their father died. We would apply, in other words, the usual rule of Abodi Paraminisi Yisayim. But Eda Tevas Tsubasa, but Rav Shimon would be saying, if she's not actually right now demanding her Ksuba, Ein Yoshin Mashvianosa, then the Yoshin, if she's only demanding the Zonis and Basin right now, then the Yoshin would not have the right to make her take a Shvua that she hadn't taken anything from her husband's property. In the case of Mizonis, the shvur would be that, for example, that her husband might conceivably have left her money. He might have left her money or bank account or whatever to take Mizonis from in the future. Right. So now she's coming and saying, "There's no such thing." Then the Yosomim can make her swear to that. So the Tanakama would say for that, Reb Shimon would say, "No, for Mizonis we don't make her swear, right. Only to collect her ksuba."
She's not going for the ketuvah of a kark or something like that. She's just what's
right. If we understand it that way, then it means that Reb Shimon and the Chachamim of our Mishnah are arguing about the same, are having the same argument as Chanan and the Bnei Kohenim Gog, which we have in towards the end of our Masech. We learn in the Mishnah there, Misha Holach Medina Sayyam. If a man went overseas, it's going to be in the last parak of Amasechta. Misha holach l'medina sayam. If a husband went overseas, the ishte tevas mizonis, and his wife is demanding mizonis, which she says that my husband didn't leave me anything behind for mizonis, so I need you based in to go sell some of this property to raise money for my mizonis. Wait. Chanan omer tishava b'sof, lo tishava b'tchila. So Chanan in the Mishnah says over there, that she swears only at the end, but not at the beginning. Now the end and the beginning, it's a little confusing over here. The Rashi's over here on the first part of this are printed on Amud Aleph. But anyway, what we mean is when her husband dies or divorces her and she demands uksuba, that's when Chanan says that's when she would have to swear. But now when she's now batchila, while they're still married and she's demanding mizonis, she would not have to swear. So Reb Shimon will be following the opinion of Chanan. They're still married. He went overseas. She's saying he didn't leave me anything in the house. Therefore, I need mizonis. So now she wouldn't have to swear at that point yet that she didn't take anything from her husband. Later on, besides, when it's time for her to collect her ksuba, then we're going to make her swear that throughout the marriage she never took anything that she wasn't supposed to or wasn't partially paid off the ksuba or whatever. And the Mishnah continues, Nechluku ala b'nei kohenim gedolim. Actually, it's not so obvious that the shvur is in Beis Din. That's what we mentioned yesterday. There's a Gemara in Gittin that says originally they would have her swear in Beis Din, but the swearing a false shvur has very serious consequences, and after all, she might have sometimes taken something maybe without even realizing it. So instead, what we do is either we make her swear outside of Beis Din, where then the consequences are not as severe, or if it's in Beis Din, then instead we have her take a neder. If you ever took anything, then such and such payers should be also to you, for example. Okay, so then she won't eat those payers. The Mishnah continues. Just wait a second. The sons of the Kohenim Gedolim, and we're not just talking Stam simple people, these were also Talmid Chachamim, so they argued with Chanan, they say she would have to swear both at the beginning and both at the end. In other words, so when she wants to collect Mizonis, yes, she's going to have to swear that she had, that her husband didn't already leave her something from Mizonis. So now we would say Reb Shimon Kachanan Rabbanim to Bnei Kohenim Gedolim. So now Reb Shimon of our Mishnah would be following Chanan, and the Chachamim of our Mishnah, who say that she has to swear in order to collect mizonis from Yisomim, would be like going like the Bnei Kohenim Gedolim.
So
that's what it means. However, Maski for Rav Sheshes, but Rav Sheshes asks on that, Hi Yoshi Mashvi Anosa, then why is the expression that the Yoshim are making her swear? Basin Mashvi Anosa Mibolai. In that case, the expression should be that Basin is making her swear. Because after all, the guy's not dead yet. He's only in Medina Siyam. So there's no Yoshim to talk about.
No Yoshim.
Tosfos actually brings up a question when we deal with this machlokas of Chanan and Bnei Kohenim Gedolim in the last parak of our Masechta, we're actually going to mention that an opinion of Shmuel that says that actually we don't have to in poskim mizonis la'ishas ish. When she's married, it's not Beistin's responsibility to arrange mizonis for her. If her husband went overseas, we assume he left her something, and if not, then fine, it's her responsibility. For the meanwhile, she'll work, she'll do maisi adero or whatever, and she'll raise money for herself, and afterwards, when her husband comes home, then she'll square accounts with him. That's something else. That's if he doesn't want to feed her. Here we're talking about he left on a business trip or whatever. She's claiming that he didn't leave her anything behind for food. So Shmuel says, we're going to learn about it on Daf of Zion, that Shmuel says that Beis Din doesn't have to get involved with that. So Tosfos leaves a Tzorach Iyun, why the Gemara doesn't say it like that, and different Rishonim talk about, so then what does the Gemara mean over here, why it can't why it can't explain like that. One explanation is that it means if Reb Yirmiya is following Shmuel's understanding of things, then he would have phrased things differently in our Gemara. He wouldn't be saying that if she's not, that if she's demanding Mizonis, Yoshin Mashbianos or in Yoshin Mashbianos, still he'd be using, there wouldn't be anything to talk about Yoshin because we're talking about the guy's alive. Okay. So Ela Amr of Sheshes Aha. So rather, Rav Sheshes says, Rav Shimon's statement in our Mishnah about distinguishing whether she's demanding Huksuba or whether she's demanding something else is referring back to the previous Mishnah that we had on Pei Vav Amud Beis. We said, in that Mishnah, we talk about the various cases when she would have to swear in order to collect her ksuba. And then we said there are cases where she's potter from swearing because the husband wrote her out a document that says that she's potter. So the Mishnah said over there, if she went from her husband's grave, in other words, after her husband was buried, back to her father's house, or she returned to her father-in-law's house where she'd been living with her husband, but she didn't become a trustee over the husband's nechassim, and then ena yoshim ashbianosa, then the yoshim can't make her swear that she didn't collect anything, because now she's not a trustee over his estate, over his nechassim, such that they should have anything to be swear her on. But the imnasis apotropia yoshim ashbianosa ala osid lavoi bein ashbianosa al masha avar. If she did become an apotropia, so let's say her husband had appointed her an apotropia, as we said before, then the Yoshin can make her swear they can make her swear on everything that happened after her husband died, but not on anything that happened while he was alive. Not a matter of Gilgushvor. They can make her swear before she collects her ksuba or before she collects anything from them that as an apotropa, she didn't take anything she wasn't supposed to. But they can't make her swear about anything that happened while her husband was alive. They can only make her swear about once her husband died, did she take any of the funds for herself. We learned actually in the Gemara before, we learned on Pei Zayin, that Rav Masna said that actually they can't sue her for anything until after the burial, because we want the burial to happen as soon as possible. We don't want her to think, I can't be bothered and then leave it to somebody else or whatever, but fine. In the Mishnah we had said, the Tanakhama had said they can only be mashpia her ala osid lover, vein mashpia no sal mashover. Now, the osid of Shimon Lamemer. So now, Reb Shimon would be coming to say, no, even as far as ala osid is kol zman shetivas tubosa, only if she's demanding her ksuba, yoshin mashpia noisa, then the yoshin can make her swear for what she did as an apotropa. Eina tevas tubosa, but if she's not right now demanding her ksuba, eina yoshin mashpia noisa, just for the fact that she was an apotropa, the Yoshin cannot make her swear. Now, there is a concept in halacha. Usually, to make a person swear in Beis Din, you usually need a tainas bori. You need, like, for example, before we were talking about, the husband claims, I definitely paid you your ksuba, and she's denying it, or I paid part of it, and I paid all of it, and she's claiming I paid part of it, or whatever. There is something in the Masechta Shavuos where it talks about, if you appoint somebody as an apotropa, you appoint somebody as a trustee of your estate, even if you only have a tainas shema, you're saying maybe during the time that you were an apotropos, you took some, you misappropriated some funds for yourself. I want you to swear that you didn't. That's a valid claim, and Beis Din will make the apotropos swear. So now the Shimon is saying this concept that she should have to swear, if she was apotropos, only applies if she's right now coming to collect her ksuba. But if right now she's saying, you know what, my ksuba, I'll leave for another time, and they're saying, yeah, but you were an apotropa, swear that you didn't take any money during that time that you were an apotropa, then we say, no, they can't. Rav Shimon is saying they can't do that.
Why not swear that your husband didn't leave your pack of money for food?
Right now we're not talking about food. Right now we're talking about an apotropa. Right now we're talking about the husband at some point had appointed her that she is in charge of his affairs, that she'll buy and sell and she'll run his businesses in that frame. No, even while he was alive. So now the Yoshim want to say, is it true that you actually did things honestly and you never took anything for yourself that you weren't supposed to? So the Tanakhama would say, we learned in a previous Mishnah, unless he previously wrote her out a document pattering from swearing, then yes, they could make her swear about that. But he himself, we said in a previous Mishnah, could. And now Reb Shimon would be coming and saying that no, only if she's collecting her ksuba did the Yoshim have that ability, not otherwise.
That's all it's her mother.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. No, because it may not be their mother. Keep in mind, the man may have had more than one wife. She may be, we could be talking about the Yoshim. Yeah, we could be talking about the Yoshim from one wife, meanwhile, it's the other. Yeah. So for also the Shimon Lamema calls Mancha Kivas to boss the Yoshin Rashbinosa. So the Shimon will be coming and saying, as long as she wants to collect her ksuba, then the Yoshin can make her swear, Aina Tevas to Bossa Aina Yoshin Rashbinosa. The Kamifti plugged the Abba Shol Rabbanon. In which case, we would say that Rav Shimon and the Chachamim are arguing on an argument that we find between Abba Shol and the Chachamim. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, Apotropos Sheminohu Avi Yisoyim Yishava. If like now, there can be two ways an Apotropos is appointed over an estate. You can have where before the guy dies, he himself appoints somebody as an Apotropos, or you can have where after he died, and the Yoshim are Ktanim, and they don't know how to manage things yet, then Basin will appoint one. So now, the Mishnah says, they're Apotropos Sheminohu Avi Yisoyim, an Apotropos who was appointed by the father of the Yisoyim, Yishava, then if the Yisoyim later on want to make him swear, that he didn't misappropriate anything, then they can do that. Minuhu Beistin lo Yishava. But if he was appointed by Beistin, then he doesn't, then, if he was appointed by Beistin, then he doesn't have to
he doesn't know him anything.
Because, well,
in your favor.
That, ah, so one second. Rashi explains on the basis of the Gemara over there that what it means is the Chachamim say, if the, think of it like this. If the father appointed him, the fact that he knows that later on he's going to have to take a shavua is not going to dissuade him from taking the position in the first place. Because why would the father be appointing him an apotropos over his children? Is obviously because, not so much because he trusts him, but because he had some hana from him during his lifetime. This person is being appointed an apotropos. The father must have done him some tremendous favor in the past, and therefore now, out of gratitude, he's willing to accept the apotroposship over his estate after he dies. And so therefore, so even if he knows that later on he's going to have to take a shvua, his sense of gratitude will make it that he's not going to avoid taking the position. But based in appointing him, the Tanakama is saying over there, he might say, what do I need this hassle? You're appointing me an apotropos, very nice. But later on, I'm not taking a shvua that I didn't take a position for myself. I can't be bothered. So the Tanakama says over there that if Minur based then we don't make him swear because otherwise he's not going to want to take the job in the first place. Sure. On the other hand, Abashola Mechilu Fadvarim. Abashol says it's the act is the other way around. Minu based in Yeshava, Minu Avi Yisamim Lo Yeshava. If based in appointed him, then we make him swear. Because he would say, the fact that the Dayonim of the based in trust me, this is a tremendous honor. So he's willing to do that, even if he knows that later on he may have to swear. As opposed to if the Avi Yisamim appoints him, it's no big deal. Okay, you know, some random guy decided to appoint me as an apotropos. I can't be bothered if I know that I'm going to have to swear later.
On the other hand, Chris over here is getting paid, so
he may be getting paid, but even so, it's still a big hassle to swear afterwards and to keep the books down to every penny. And yeah, the Gemara in Gittin actually has a whole long thing about the responsibilities of the apotropos. He has very complicated responsibilities because he's dealing with things on behalf of the Soyman Ketanim, so he has to be extra careful with everything he does, and he has to, the Rambam phrases it at the end of Pilchus Nachlas, he says that the apotropos has to realize that the Eivishter is the Abi Yisoyman. So he has to be very careful. So Abishol says that if a father of the Yisoyman appointed him, then he might say, I can't be bothered, therefore we're going to be making on him and not force him to swear.
Exactly.
He's still going to have to be very careful with his account books, but at least we're not going to make him swear. But if he was appointed by Beistin, the fact that he knows in the future he's going to have to swear, he's going to say, okay, you know what, but I'm willing to do it for the honor that the fact that the Beistin of the city is willing to trust me. So yeah.
It's
so
usually now, in Israel, it's honorable person that they appoint as a...
Right. So now, yeah, of course, they always do. So, Beistin is always going to find, the Gemara discusses the Gemara discusses it, they have qualifications that are needed for an apotropos. So, in fact, Tosfos points out over here, necessarily we have to say in our Mishnah then, when we're talking about her being an apotropos, we can't say that it means that Beistin appointed her, because Beistin is not going to appoint a woman as an apotropos. Among the qualifications for an apotropos, you have various qualifications that it discusses in the Gemara and Gittin over there, and one of them is going to be, he has to be trustworthy, of course, but it has to be a man. Because a man is more likely, if necessary to come to Beistin, he's more likely to. Women in general tend not to go to Beistin as often, so yeah. And on the other hand, Tosfos says it can't be that she just appointed herself, so it has to be that the father appointed her to take effect after he died. So now, Rav Shimon to Abishol. So now Rav Shimon is saying, like Abishol. So therefore, because because the Avi Yisraelim appointed him, according to Avishol, that, or in this case, appointed her, then therefore she doesn't have to swear, just the Shvor Sapatrupsis. So when she wants to collect her Ksuba, she's not swearing on the grounds of having been an Apatrupa, then she's swearing that I didn't collect any Maksuba all this time. Fine, they can be Megalgal into it, maybe that she didn't take anything as an Apatrupa, but they can't make her swear about that exclusively. Because that would be like Avishol. Rabbanon, Kerabbanon, the Chachamim, in our Mishnah, who disagree with Reb Shimon, would be going like the Chachamim against Abishol and saying, on the contrary, the fact that she was appointed by the father, or in this case, by her husband, means that she does have to swear. Because again, like the Chachamim said, out of a sense of gratitude, she'd be taking the job. She wouldn't worry about the fact that she has to take a shavuot. Wouldn't dissuade her.
No, she knows that she's protecting her children.
Well, that, well, again, it may not be her children. Keep in mind, it may be her stepchildren, but whatever. Okay. But Maskifla Abayas, Abayas says that's all very nice, but the problem with that is the Lashon of Reb Shimon. Hai calls Manchetevas Tsubasa. The Lashon that Reb Shimon is saying, as long as she's collecting her ksuba. Now, what it comes out, according to this explanation, Reb Shimon is trying to be makel on her. The problem is the expression calls Manchetevas Tsubasa sounds like, on the contrary, saying you Tanakama are saying that there's a case where even she wants to collect her ksuba, she'd be potter from a shavua. And Reb Shimon is saying, no, as long as she's collecting her ksuba, then she has to swear. So in that case, if Reb Shimon is coming to be mekel, im tovas nibolo, the expression should be, if she's collecting her ksuba, then she has to swear. Because then it would mean that he's mekel. The Lashon that was saying over here sounds like Reb Shimon is being machna on her, that there's a case where the Tanakama would not require her to swear, and Reb Shimon is requiring. So El Amar Abaya Aho. So Abaya says Reb Shimon's statement is referring back to the previous Mishnah, the beginning, rather not so much that the same Mishnah as we said before, but the beginning of that earlier Mishnah on Teivav and Bez. We said Kosev La Neder Shvoa in the Olayich. Aho on this. Aho. It refers to this. The word Aho means this.
That's spelled H.
Aleph, the Aleph is a prefix in Aramaic that means on. So, aho means on this. It goes on this Mishnah. Kosova neder shvor in your life. We said in the Mishnah that on Pevavam and Beis that if the husband wrote her out previously a document that says that I'm not going to impose on you any neder shvor, ena yocholash miyochol. So, we said he can't be mashvir her, but the Yoshim could. But he continues, neder, if he wrote neder shvor in me below the Yoshai, below the boim yoshusi, alayach al yoshayach al boim yoshusi. If he writes that I have no claim for neder shvor against neither me nor my Yoshim, nor anybody who comes from my Rishus. So we learned in the Mishnah, Rashi had said it means even people who bought from him. Other Rishonim say that no, it's not including them, but it means other people that maybe that he assigned rights to or whatever. Anyway, and he says, there's no claim for neder shvur against you or your yoshim or anyone who comes from your rishus. So the Tanakama is saying over there that in that case, since he wrote out such a document, then when she wants to collect, even though she's collecting from the yoshim, or even if her yoshim are collecting from the yoshim, then nothing doing. You can't make her take a shvur. But also the Shimon Lameima. Now the Shimon will be coming and saying it's not so simple. No, if she's claiming her ksuba, the Yoshim can still make her swear, even though he wrote her out that document. In which case, we're convinced that he plugged the Abishol ben Ima Miriam Rabbanon. In which case, they're doing the same machlokas as Abishol ben Ima Miriam and the Chachamim, which we learned on Daf Pei Zayin, where Abishol ben Abba Miriam said, the fact that the Chachamim said, when you're collecting from Yoshim, you have to take a shvua, then we can't override that with his tznach. So he may have written out saying that you're potter, but nevertheless, the fact that it's a Tachanas Chachamim means that she still has to swear. So the Shimon would be holding like Abishol. Because that's the thing. So Abishol ben Ima Miriam would say that very nice, he made a Tanai, but the Chachamim said, whenever you're collecting from Yoshim, you can only collect with a Shavua. Therefore, that's how it is. Therefore, we can't override that. So now the Shimon to Abishol, but Abonin, to Abonin. So now Reb Shimon would be holding like Abishol, so there's no way to override that when she's collecting her ksuba. The Chachamim would be holding like the Chachamim against Abishol. But, which in that case, by the way, Tosfos points out, if we learn like that, then it would mean since we said before that the halacha is like Abishol and Miriam, then it would mean the halacha is like Reb Shimon and our Mishnah as well. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, Maski for a papa, but a papa asked on that, for Tenach calls Manchetev Tsubasa. Fine, that explains the first half of Reb Shimon's statement, that as long as she's collecting Hoksuba, she has to swear, Ena Tevas Tsubasa, Ma'ikamema. What is Reb Shimon adding with the second part of his statement? as opposed to who would say, that if she's not collecting her ksuva, she doesn't have to take a shua. Rather, the Papa says, Rav Shimon is referring back to yet an earlier Mishnah, which we also had on Pei Vav Amud Beis, where we talked about that you have the case where the husband appointed her an apotropo or a chendanis, and put her in charge of it, and he said, and now Harez Mashpia calls Man Shiyutze, he can make her swear anytime she wants, and Rav Eliezer says, not only on that, forget about Gilgul Shvuah. But we learned in the Gemara that Rabbi Eliezer said he can even make her swear about the household jobs that she was doing. She was spinning wool. She was making bread. Did she not take anything of that? Rabbi Shimon said Rabbi Eliezer said he can make her swear about that anytime she wants. The Chacham said no. We discussed in the Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer is not even saying Gilgul Shvuah. He's saying Mahatchila. He can take her to basis just for that. So now, Rav Shimon is coming to say, not like a third opinion, not like Rav Eliezer, not like the Chachamim, he can't be Mashpia Kol Zman Shiyutze, even about the Apotropa or the Chenvinis or anything like that. Only she can, they can only make her swear only when she's collecting her ksuba. So now, in other words, Rav Papa is agreeing with the previous, with Abaye's explanation of the first half of Rav Shimon's statement. But he's saying, so the first half is coming to tell us that even when he told her you don't have a neder shvuah, nevertheless, if she's collecting from the Yisoyimim, she still has to take a shvuah when she's collecting Uksuba. And the second half of the statement says, when she's not collecting Uksuba, then we don't follow either Rav Shimon, or the Chachamim or Rav Eliezer that says that he can make her swear while he's alive, and then Apotropa or Chenvinis or Pilko or Isasa or whatever, rather he can't make her swear on anything. That she's not collecting Uksuba at that time, right? So therefore, yeah. So now here's where Tosfos says, if we say, again, if we're saying that one half of Rav Shimon's statement follows Abba Shaul ben Imam Miriam, and we said previously the halacha is like him, then Tosfos says the result is the halacha would have to be like Rav Shimon in both aspects of it, that we can make her swear only when she's collecting Uksuba and not otherwise. So again, it does mention this concept in Shulchan Aruch. But the halacha in the end again is like Abba Shaul, that he can make her swear when she's collecting the Zoinus, for example, from the Yisoyimim, but when she's collecting Huxuba, then it'll depend what he wrote out for her. Whether he wrote out that he's exempting her from a shavuah or not. And as far as an apotropa or whatever, he can't. As far as an apotropa, I think it says in Shulchan Aruch two opinions whether he can make her swear about that any time or not. In other words, is the halacha in the end like Rav Shimon or not?
So the first part, everyone agrees. It comes to sending, you have to swear. If she's demanding her.
That's Rav Shimon saying that. That's the thing. Rav Shimon is saying, like Abba Shaul and even Miriam, when she's collecting from Yisoyimim, regardless whether she's collecting silver or Mizonis, either way she's going to have to swear. Because she's collecting from Yisoyimim.
Right, and it's got Masna.
Right, it's not so much Masna Mashpat Vatara, because tonight Shimon Shnoi Kayim. But Abba Shaul says the fact that the Chachamim said that you always have to collect, when you always have to take a shvuah when you're collecting from Yisoyimim, means we have to hold you to that. The Yisraelim themselves can waive the Shavuah if they want, but they're not obligated to. But now, the second half of Rav Shimon's statement was saying, he's saying that the husband, when he's alive, if he wants to swear her over the fact that she was a chenvinis or apotropa or what have you, he can't do that, Rav Shimon is saying, unless she's collecting her ksuba, he can't make her swear the regular Shavuah apotropsis as long as it's just a matter of her having been an apotropa.
The meaning behind it would be because of Ava, maybe whatever.
Okay. Sure, everyone.